WFF with Green Firm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Superstar Jenny Green back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It's Wednesday, the 9th of December, which means...
What?
Only 116 days to Easter.
Oh, you had to go there. Right, coming up on Game On tonight, Lisa Fallon talks Champions League and previews the Women's FAI Cup Final.
Bourbon and Konate and Sabitzer. Sabitzer swept in there and Angelino's there. Oh, yeah. What a goal. 1 minute and 52 seconds and the Manchester City loney puts one past Manchester United.
Aoife Murray and Aisling Connolly look ahead to the All-Ireland Camogie final between the Tribeswomen and the Cats.
Here comes Galway with the ball. Shot goes in and the ball is brilliantly blocked and finished to the net. Scored by Ailish O'Reilly for Galway.
Nadine Doherty runs the rule on the ill-fated ladies' football semi-final between Cork and Galway.
Carly Robeson thrust away her shoot, trying a chance again. McCaffrey! Sarah Nader in the hall and against Sarah McCaffrey.
And we speak to a man that's been chiselled by Ash. It's Len Gaynor.
Shane Callan. A Balti captain, Tipperary to an All-Ireland victory. And scoring a goal and 2 points in the process.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, how are we doing?
Good, yeah. Liverpool are 1-0 up. We're going to be talking to Lisa Fallon about it very, very shortly.
How long
Mo Salah, I think. Actually, Lisa is here with us. Lisa, who got it?
Yeah, Mo Salah, first minute and capitalising on a defensive error from Mitchell and nice and early in the game. So great start for Liverpool. Perfect start.
Great start for Wednesday.
Quivín is starting as well, as he's just known around Cork, Quivín.
Yeah, he is. And to be fair, he's had a great introduction to football at the highest level of the game now. And he's such a humble young man. You know, you can see he's got a lovely manner about him. And he probably really, you can see he's a really good fit with the culture. And Jurgen Klopp just has massive time for him. And it's great to see him in again now. And I mean, the experience that he's getting is one thing. But the other thing is just, you know, the faith that they have in him and the confidence and belief he must be getting from this is amazing.
Sound, Donica likes to say.
He's pure sound. Quivín is sound out. Yeah, typical Cork fellow. Well, speaking of good teammates, we're delighted to be joined by two of ours, Dieran and Owen, who are doing an incredible thing for the St. Vincent de Paul. They've been they've been camped out all day and they're just about to take into a tough night shift. Guys, how are you?
Well, look, we're no sporting aficionados. We haven't got great physical prowess, but I tell you what, we can take a battering by the rain for the team.
It is incredible. Dieran, I don't know what the weather is like in Dublin, walking around Cork, it's freezing cold, it's slashing raining. Of all the nights, you got a tough one, didn't she?
We did indeed. We probably could have picked a better week, but look, this is what it's all about. This is the reality, and this is what people do face every night of the week in Ireland, and we are just so delighted to be able to do our bit. It's been a brilliant day filled with music and so many people getting involved on social media, and donations are flying up. We are currently at €36,500. Wow. So we're absolutely blown away. We're here. Yeah, it is lashing, to be honest. But it's 8 degrees. So it's, I mean, it totally feels roasting for now.
We get a tan on that.
So it's 6:05. What are you guys up to now for the rest of the evening?
Great question.
We are going to storm the Fair City set after a glass of vino and recreate Ryan's singing in the rain scene from the Late Late Toy Show. We have a few prizes still to give away. We've got like hotel giveaways and concert tickets, Dermot Kennedy and Longitude and these kind of things. So we're just going to sit out here where we are, try shade ourselves from the elements and just get the buzz going on social media and try to get people to part with a few more euro if they can.
Yeah,
you know when you see people having a mid-life crisis and joining TikTok? We're going to have a mid-night crisis and we're going to join TikTok and start learning some TikTok dance. That's going to happen at midnight.
We actually did say we would learn the TikTok dance. Yeah, that's what we said. I'm in a Captain America onesie of
We've been on to you guys.
Toe shoes, yeah.
We've been on to you now for a couple of minutes, Owen, and Donica hasn't mentioned food. I know he's probably wondering, what are you going to eat for the night?
What are you going to eat? How are you going to survive? Well, what I'm really interested in, I've noticed it, you can have good teammates or work colleagues that you get on with, but roommates, rooming with someone, sleeping around with each other is totally different. How are you going to manage that dynamic? You could end up knocking each other out there.
we've been playing a few would you rather kind of games to pass the time. I don't know. I actually have no idea how we're going to pass the rest of the night without it being awkward. But we have Emma Power and Andrew Square here as well, so we'd be grand.
Brilliant.
In terms of food, though, what are we doing?
Well, people have been dead town. They've been dropping us like homemade cookies and mince pies and crisps and coffees to bait the band. So, and you know what? Some people, very trustingly, they gave us cash. They were walking by and they said, here's a few euro for your thingy. So we might tip our Deliveroo driver, you know. That's a joke. Every single penny donated is going into the campaign.
Yeah.
we're well looked after is the answer.
Owen, just on that, it is an incredible time for St. Vincent de Paul. I know I heard you speaking across today, just the importance of people helping out now where they can. And Irish people have been incredibly generous, but what you're doing, the support you're giving to a charity like that is massively important.
Well, thank you, but and at the same time, it's only a tiny fraction of what they need. They're down, I think they're you know in the tens of millions by way of fundraising, and they said this year there's been a 40% increase in the need for the service. And I guess the kind of stuff Vincent de Paul will be dealing with, particularly around the festive time, it's families maybe who can't pay bills at Christmas, let alone put a massive turkey on the table and buy loads of presents and. You know, all these things. So that, like, that kind of stuff, I think, it resonates really hard for a lot of people. So I guess maybe that's why people have been so generous in a year where there's been so many asks of people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Darren, before we leave you go, how do people help? How do people donate?
If you search 2FM Breakfast Christmas Sleep Out, or else you can go to the link in our bios, either of our bios on Instagram or on the RT2FM Instagram bio as well. There's loads of different ways you can find it.
Brilliant. Darren and Owen, fair play to you. Pass on our best wishes to Andrew and Emma as well. Well done, guys. Outstanding.
Thanks,
out of you.
Guys. A pleasure.
Good luck.
See you guys.
Wouldn't fancy that, Marie.
Absolutely not.
I'd be like a bag of cats. I bribed my kids when we were camping out the back garden this year at about 12:30. I was there. I will give you sweets if we can go inside now.
Were you scared?
No, I was just, there's a nice cosy bed. Well, fair play to them. It's all for a great cause with the St. Vincent de Paul.
It really is. Now, Lisa Fallon, as I mentioned, is with us. And Lisa, Istanbul and PSG is also on as well in our studio. And you might have an update for us?
Yeah, Neymar has put PSG 1-0 up, and a stunning goal, a typical Neymar goal. He completely sold Punk, the Beşiktaş centre-back, just dropped the shoulder, completely sent him to the shops, and he curled it into beautifully into the top corner. Stunning goal, typical goal of his. And obviously, I think it was 7 minutes into the restarted game, but obviously the game tonight started from the 14th minute after last night's circumstances caused the game to be abandoned. So, but PSG certainly dominating the game so far.
Lisa, how important for sport was that moment last night where the players nearly took control and said, this is enough now? And, you know, I think in all sports we're dealing with the same issues, but it was important to see both teams actually stand together and say, no, we're walking off the pitch.
It was action, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was, and I think, you know, it was a landmark moment because up until this point there's been a lot of talk and there's been a lot of retrospective action, and this was the first time that a real, genuine, collective, aligned stand was taken. And also, I think it was really significant that it was a Champions League game that moment happened in, a game that seemed to be right at the top level of football and the highest level, and that the collectiveness of all the players to take that stand together. I think it was a really significant moment, and it sends out a signal maybe to other players that who encounter things sometimes and let it go and report it after the game, that there is that pressure just to stay in the moment and not allow things to distract you from your performance. But last night what happened was those moments were really told you cannot be in this game and we'll stop the game. The game won't go ahead, and I think it's a significant moment. And also from a fan's perspective, it'll be interested to see if and when moments like that happen from the fans, will it change the courses of action that come from the players?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It will be really interesting to see if it does make an impact when the fans come in, because so often when the fans were there, there were instances of racism, and I don't know if they were dealt with strongly enough, but I think after the players what happened last night, they realise that what they can do, what they do will make a difference. And sometimes, you know, you wonder if you take the football away from the fans, is that what it needs to happen for them to realise that the way they act, the things that they say are not okay? But I suppose we'll probably find out soon enough when fans do start coming in, although we did see some already who were booing the knee, which was really, really disappointing. But this was subsequent to that, so hopefully that this will definitely hammer home the message that you just can't behave in that way. Now, let's move on to Manchester United, Lisa, because there are a huge amount of very frustrated Manchester United fans. And I think going into that game, nobody expected a collapse like that from Manchester United out of the Champions League now. And you'd have to wonder, would a collapse like that have happened, Lisa, if a different manager was in place?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, United have shown real Jekyll and Hyde moments throughout the season so far, and that's their biggest problem. There's no consistency. They show that they've got really top levels of performance, Paul Pogba included in that, but there's so many distractions, and it's like there's an arrogance about them at times where they just feel we can switch it on when we want to. But last night, what actually happened was, like, I mean, they're 2-0 down after 13 minutes. It was a shell shock for them, and it's not easy to come back from that. And, you know, then all of a sudden, like, they could have been 3-0 down actually before the break, and then obviously Justin Kluivert put RB Leipzig ahead, you know, made it 3 in the 69th minute. And, you know, it took such a long time for United to respond. But I say it all the time, like, you look at this United team and you look at previous United teams, and they always had huge personalities with an aura about them that you just looked at them and you felt, oh, this player can really produce a moment of magic. And when you look at the United team,
or you wanted to be them when you grew up as well. There's a lot of that.
Absolutely, there was something inspirational about them. And but you look at the United team at the moment, and Paul Pogba is probably the biggest personality, but it's more of an arrogance and a swagger that, and he hasn't done enough at United to have that presence or to have that type of, you know, aura about him. He dips in and out, whereas you look at the great players, Eric Cantona, Ryan Giggs, you know, there's players that they just grew. Mm-hmm. They weren't it when they got there, but they grew into this massive personality. And this,
even Peter Schmeichel in goals, you know.
I mean, you could go through from all the way through the 80s into the 90s and the 2000s. There's so many of them that you can talk. And when you look back at the compilations from that era, it's just personality after personality. And there's a real buzz about them. But you look at, and there's just nobody like that. Fernandes is probably the one player that can get to that point. And obviously, you've got Mason Greenwood, Martial, Rashford. They're players that have that potential to become United players, what we'd have seen it. But you have to earn your stripes first at United. And I think the other thing as well, you look back at Manchester United managers and the personality that Sir Alex Ferguson had, like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just doesn't have that aura about him. You know, Jose Mourinho had the aura, he just didn't have the culture and the philosophy that fit the club. But whereas Solskjaer has the culture and the philosophy, but he doesn't have that aura of a Manchester United manager. And I think, you know, we're probably starting to see signs of it, where he's been disgruntled in the media and he's talking them up as backs against the wall and all that kind of thing. He is starting to evolve, but whether or not he'll evolve quickly enough to maintain his job is another story.
Lisa, it's interesting, the aura side of it, but just general, in your opinion, as a manager, set up, you know, just listening today, it's hard to know, were they set up correctly with a back four or a back three? That is a manager's role.
Yeah, it is, completely. And you know, you have to get your tactics right. But more importantly, the players have to believe in the tactical approach to the game. And I often find that if, you know, they have to have a certain amount of stability in how you play and how you approach games. You always have to adapt to the teams that you're playing against, but you still always have to have your own core way of playing at the underlying most within every approach to every match. And I just think with United, there's so many changes, and, you know, personnel changes. And yes, of course, they have to rotate the squad, and they have a big game this weekend. But the players also have to believe in the changes, and they have to believe in the tactical approach. And sometimes I think if you change it too often, you can actually make the players think that you don't know what you're doing, or you haven't really got that set way. Because if you have a way of playing and develop it and then make little adjustments to it for different games, then what you do is you develop your own style and your own culture and the belief and the ability to play it and adapt it. But if you keep changing it, no one really gets a chance to get really good at it. And I think that's a bit of a problem for United at the moment. Everything's Jekyll and Hyde. The performances, the players are Jekyll and Hyde, and so too are the tactical approaches.
If Ole wasn't a former player, do you think he'd still be there?
Look, it's one of those questions, you know, you can't really answer it. I think he's getting more time. I think he knows the culture, and I think the biggest mistake United made in previous appointments since Sir Alex Ferguson retired, I think the biggest problem they had was that they didn't appoint managers that fit the culture. Because United is a club that has its own identity. And at the moment, I'm not really sure what the identity of a Man United team is.
Yeah, it's difficult to know if they are going to be able to turn it around in time as well, for Ole's sake, because he's getting an awful lot of slack and people are getting fed up. And, you know, when you're...
That's par for the course, though. Yeah. You know, as a manager, that comes as part of the game. That is, you have to be able to deal with that. But obviously at a club of Manchester United, it's going to be in multiples of what other managers are going to face.
Lisa, what about dealing with difficult agents? Like, we mentioned Paul Pogba, but like dealing with his agent is a reflection of him, and what his comments reflect poorly on Paul Pogba, but just the timing of it, awful.
But that's the problem. Like, agents are a part and parcel of the game, and often the agent is not about what the team is about. The agent is about the player, or the agent's... what the agent might get out of a move or a change in career. And I've certainly seen and heard of agents steering players in directions that aren't necessarily best for the player, but maybe best for the agent. And then, having said that, there are some really, really good agents out there who really look after their players well and steer them in the right way. But the problem at the moment is the agent is doesn't care about the team. And you know, Donica, as well as I do, it's always about the team. Everything is about the team. And the problem Pogba has at the moment is he's been made to look like an outlier, and that probably doesn't help his case in the dressing room, even if his demeanour inside there, because a lot of the players seem to back him and seem to enjoy his presence in terms of what you see coming out in the media when they talk about him as a character. But, you know, what goes out into the public domain then, it seems to be quite different from his agent. It does make it difficult for him. It does.
In fairness, Ollie, he did have a little bit of a go last night afterwards when he said that Pogba's agent needs to realise that he is part of a team. So he did have some words. There are other games tonight in the Champions League as well, and Group B seems to be the most exciting one of them anyway, because all four teams in Group B have a chance to qualify. So at 8 o'clock, Inter are playing Shakhtar, and Real Madrid are playing Borussia Mönchengladbach. Real have never failed to reach the last 16 in the history of the Champions League, but they do look like they are in a little bit of trouble. Lisa, we're going to move on now to the Women's FAI Cup final, which is on Saturday on RTÉ as part of a celebration of women's sport. And it does look like it will be a tough one for Cork City coming up against the mighty B-Mount, who have been in absolutely fantastic form this season and have already beaten Cork City twice as well.
Yeah, but I know from Cork City women's team back in 2017 when they did win the FAI Cup, they weren't expected to win it that day either. So what they will have learned from that day is that anything is possible on a cup final day, and you know, because it can affect teams in different ways. And like, Cork City are going into this game, they already have one in the bag. P-Mount in the Women's National League era since 2012, P-Mount don't have one.
And lost the last two finals.
They have. So, you know, there's a bit of a monkey on the P-Mount back that they need to get that off. And, you know, you look, Raheny United have won 3, Wexford Utes have won 3, Shelburne have won 1, Cork City have won 1. And I know, like, P-Mount, obviously the big thing for them this year was to win the league and secure their Champions League spot again for next year. But the double, and they're even talking it up, like, they're not shying away from the double. Like, they're talking about it, we want it, we're going after it. So, but I think, you know, the P-Mount squad has so much depth in it.
And experience.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was at their game against Shelburne, the 3-1 game up in Pmount for the title decider, actually, as it turned out to be. And it was such a good game. Two really, really good teams going at each other. But Pmount's experience, and, you know, they have that capacity to get goals from general play. But, you know, on the night, Áine O'Gorman was lethal from set pieces. And, you know, she you know, they have that capacity to get goals from different moments of the game. And listen, I think it's going to be a cracking game with so much talent in both squads. And both teams have players who can produce a moment of magic and just turn a game on its head. Like, you look at the likes of Saoirse Noonan, she got two goals the weekend. Like, she's, what an incredible person and player she is. You know, she's got two All-Ireland finals in so many respects. You know, she wears the jersey for Cork in the ladies' Gaelic football, and she represents Cork City then in the women's FAI Cup final. You know, she's incredible, and, you know, I know she's absolutely loving the moment that she is in right now. But both teams have players who have the capacity to turn the game on its head, and, you know, I think it's going to be a really good game.
Lisa, what does it come down to then? Does it come down to Pmount having, like you said, quality players, but also the experience of playing in Champions League? Surely that competitive edge, like we saw with Dundalk, matters in big games like this?
Yeah, it does. It does. But it only matters if it comes off for you on the day, you know. And that's the thing. Like, I remember when I was with the Cork City men's team, we had four cup finals in a row and, you know, lost the first one. Seanie Maguire scored in the... with 20 seconds to go in the next one. And, you know, they are confidence games, and, you know, it's a big pitch out in Tala. It'll be interesting to see if it's still the same size that Shamrock Rovers would normally have it, or will it be at the reduced size?
Should it be in Tala, though?
Well, if you see this condition that the Aviva Stadium was in, I would say, yeah. You know, it's you know, it's the pitch was really, really poor, I thought, for the men's FAI Cup final. But for the women's game, it is where it is. You know, I'm sure the players would love to play in the Aviva Stadium. It is a really special day. You know, having been fortunate enough to have been there, it's a unique day, and it's, you know, you want to play in the biggest stadium and the best venue. The showcase game in women's football, I believe, should be in the Aviva Stadium, but it is in Tallaght Stadium this year. And, you know, just on the basis of what I saw from the pitch alone, if I was playing, I would prefer to play on the Tala surface this weekend than the Aviva Stadium one.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. Lisa is going to stay with us and keep an eye on all the European football. We'll be back then in just a couple of minutes to chat the All-Ireland Camogie final.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, the All-Ireland Camogie final is just a few days away. Kilkenny and Galway will face off again to look ahead to it. We are joined by Aisling Connolly and Aoife Murray. Aoife, I'm going to go to you first. I think there's a lot being talked about with regards to Kilkenny and them losing the last three finals in a row. They are in their fifth, but I think another way of looking at it is just how remarkably consistent they've been over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, it's more of a testament to the quality of players that they're constantly getting back into that final game. And look, I know they've had more defeats, unfortunately, over the past few years. However, you know, having a new manager, having Brian Dowling in, even having their captain, Lucinda, in, it brings a bit of freshness, doesn't it, to the whole thing. And they've blooded a lot of new players this year. So, and a lot of those players haven't been through the heartache over the past few years. So I really think they won't be dwelling on the past come Saturday.
Yeah, well, they've certainly been out in force over the last week saying that they're not dwelling on the past and that they are looking forward. Although I imagine, Aisling Connolly, it's easier said than done to actually focus on the task in hand and not be kind of reminded of those painful few years that came before this weekend's one.
For sure, and I agree with Aoife that, you know, these players and the new management team will focus on what they can control, and they can't control the past, and they'll be looking forward towards the game at the weekend and just focusing on this year and not looking back, as you said. So in saying that, I do, you know, having been a player who's lost two All-Ireland finals to Wexford in Croke Park, it does drive you on. That bitterness and that playing with an edge does impact your performance and, you know, your motivation, your drive to go back again and again. So for some of the more experienced players, they'll have that chip on their shoulder which can be funneled and channeled into positive energy. And so certainly some of them will bring that aggression and that hurt into the match on Saturday. And I'm sure it's going to fuel a lot of motivation for the girls, especially on the Kilkenny team. You know, losing three last All-Ireland finals in a row, they won't want to make that four, that's for sure.
Well, after the semi-finals, you could definitely see the emotion on the faces of the Kilkenny players. You knew that it meant an awful lot to them, Aoife, to get there again. But if we were just to look at the two semi-finals, they were very different. There was a really, really tough battle for Kilkenny against Cork. A bit more straightforward for Galway. They were, they did make it, it was a little bit easier on them. Who do you think is going to be the happier camp now heading into this final?
Look, I think you said it, both semi-finals were so different. It's a hard one to summarise who was happier. I think both were extremely happy just to get out of it. I think, look, it's something that's said so often, you know, semi-finals are there to be won. Both did the job. And I think that's possibly how they might have felt after the semi-final. Job done, onto the final. But if you look at both of them, I think you look at the Cork and Kilkenny game, I actually think Cork probably solved the problem for Kilkenny in that game. Cork were blitzing them in the first quarter. Jim O'Connor was causing Dormer huge problems inside, and the management moved Jim out to the middle third, which I couldn't personally understand because I thought the way they had set up was causing Kilkenny huge problems. I think actually Cork solved that issue for Kilkenny, and then obviously they went on to drive on from there. Bar the fact, 20 minutes without scoring, that's not going to suffice on Saturday afternoon. And then you look to the Galway game. In fairness to Tip, I think they put in such a dogged performance. They brought Galway really into kind of an arm wrestle at times. But what Tip did, I think, show maybe how you can actually create opportunities within that Galway defence. Everybody's looking at the Galway defence as this really strong unit. I think there is opportunities there, and if Kilkenny go and try and spread that ball out, drag the Galway backs around the field, they should get some return for that.
Aisling, the not scoring for long periods is definitely not ideal, and I think especially when you look at the set of forwards that Galway have and their ability to punish, they had seven different scores in that semi-final. When you look at them, obviously on any given day, what could happen when you have a set of forwards like that is that different ones can play really, really well. But who do you think is the biggest threat within that Galway set of forwards?
Yeah, I think that you know, Ailish O'Reilly and Orla McGrath are a serious threat in the forwards. You know, they're goal getters, they're match winners, they get the ball and they're speedy and they're fast and they take on their players. So I think, you know, they're the ones that everyone gets excited about when they get the ball because they just run a goal. And then you have the likes of Carrie Dolan, who scores, you know, 1-3 the last day and a great goal, and you know she can chip in. Rebecca Hanley, Kilkenny attacking forwards, attacking midfielder, and you know will pop over from long distance. But I think the real threat is Ailish O'Reilly and Orla McGrath, and I expect Davina Tobin and potentially Grace Walsh to pick up those two players. Davina Tobin did an amazing job on Amy O'Connor in the semi-final, you know, nullifying her and keeping her so scoreless. You had the same with Megan Farrell, who's number six, who, you know, held Orla Cronin scoreless. So I think their matchups are going to be very interesting, and I think the threat from Galway is the speediness and their goal scoring abilities in the forwards. But that's also matched by the, you know, the Kilkenny's defence in terms of their tenacity, the ferociousness, their work rate, and you know they have Brian Dowling. They have, you know, Philly Larkin, the next Kilkenny defender, you know, and he's, I'm sure, coaching them and working with them and making sure that they are, you know, primed and that they've got all the skills. And coming into the semi-final day where the team came with the lowest conceded from play, so it's going to be very interesting to see who wins that battle. I'd have to agree with Aoife as well. I do think there are opportunities in the Galway back for Kilkenny to exploit in a certain degree. Like, the full back line was very, very solid. They play very closely together. Sarah Durbin had a savage game the last day, player of the match. But I do think there are, you know, Kilkenny do have some sharpshooters like Denise Gall, who's going to man mark her mm-hmm. her power, her strength. And Miriam Walsh will need a lot of minding. So they both have threats, but from a Galway point of view, Dante, you're correct. Question directly, I think if Orla McGrath and Ailish O'Reilly are the ones to watch from a Kilkenny point of view.
you know, Aoife, when you think about those Kilkenny forwards as well, like, they're different, but they have a huge amount in their armour. And one of the things they have is all that experience as well. And I really enjoyed listening to Anne Dalton talking this week, and she's talking about forwards, and she quotes Roy Keane, which is probably the scariest thing you can do. But when she says that forward, you know, you don't thank the postman for delivering the post, forwards do what they do. And to hear Anne Dalton say that, is it's pretty worrying, because you know that she has one thing on her mind at the weekend, and that is scoring. But where will she play?
Look, it was a classic quote, in fairness, and I think it suits the type of player that she is. It's no nonsense, it's straight to the point, and that's exactly how she plays. And I think, look, if you're Brian and you're looking at Dalton on your team, you try to give her as much freedom as possible. As I said before, the semi-finals, you don't want her getting involved in the armour, so you don't want her in the middle of the ruck. You want her waiting out, getting that ball in space. In fairness, her favourite side seems to be her left side. So look, if you're Kilkenny, you're trying to push her to her right the whole time. But to do that, you got to get close to her. And look, it was an interesting one in the semi-final. And, you know, you have those three big name players, I think, for Kilkenny, Dalton, Gall and Miriam Walsh. And there was a constant pivot of the three of them. It was almost like a triangle. One would be in full, one would be in the half forward, and then one would be in the middle third, out around the middle of the field. And it was a constant rotation of those three players. Obviously, Dalton getting the goal in the second quarter, you know, a high ball in from Gall. Now, in fairness, if you're Cork, you look at that and you go, how did she manage to score with, I think it was a two Kilkenny versus four or five Cork players. But that's the type of player she is. She turned on a sixpence. So that was quite an interesting one. It'll be interesting to see how Galway, their defensive structure, you know, in fairness to Cathal Murray, he seems to really trust those six forwards and trust them in their positions. So it'll be interesting to see if Kilkenny go with the likes of those three forwards constantly rotating. It will be really interesting to see what they do. But look, I would keep Dalton as free as possible. Give her the free run of it. If she wants to go in full, let her go in full. I would try to give her as much space as possible.
Well, she is capable of those moments of magic anyway, Aisling, isn't she?
She's immense is the only word that you could say about her. She's been such a leader and a role model for everyone watching Camogie down through the years. And she's a big day player. The bigger the game, the bigger she plays. And I think it'll be fascinating to see how she roams and how she plays and contributes versus Niamh Kilkenny. I see them in the same boat for their respective teams, that they are just so influential, huge players. And they both will need man marking. They both will be man marked, I imagine. You know, they've both been player of the years over the last couple of years. So I feel whoever, and when they go well for their respective teams, when Anne Dalton, like, she can rally the troops. When things are going down, she's able to pull them out of that and get them on a good path again. And same with Niamh. I feel the better Niamh plays, the better the Galway team in general play. So it's going to be really interesting to see that that dynamic between those two, you know, key influential players basically on the pitch.
Aoife, it must be so tough. You mentioned there getting the matchups right, the defensive structures and stuff, but it's a final. You've got to go win it. So you've got to start worrying about yourself a little bit more. Which team do you think is more capable of kind of shaking off the shackles a bit and going winning the final?
Look, I think the good thing about Saturday, Dunnock, is you've got two quite independent managers. So I think both of them will have all their homework done, will have all the talking done of the oppositions. And probably from Tuesday onwards, they've now been concentrating on themselves. And look, it is a final, but, you know, I know myself, if you've got a process, you've got to stick to it to the best that you possibly can and trust it. You know yourself, yeah. Dunica, you've got to trust that process for the 60-odd minutes that the game is in play. And I think, you know, you could see Brian Dowling, he was quoting that in the paper during the week. For the semi-final, they trusted the process, and the process worked for them. But it's hard when the blood rushes to the head when there's a few minutes left, and you want to run up the field, but that's not your job. It will probably take a little bit of a magic on Saturday for either team to go and win it. But look, at this time of it, you're just looking forward to the game starting, and you just want it to start. And all you can do, look, I just believe in 100%. I don't believe in this 110%. Just go, you give it your best, and please God, you come out with the cup.
Aisling, We've been talking a lot about the units, the forward units, the defensive units, and there's been a huge amount of focus on them, but very little talk about the midfield, which in the semi-finals was, there were quite interesting battles. And when you look at the Galway and Kilkenny midfields, it's quite difficult to even pinpoint who's going to play there because they do rotate quite a bit. What kind of a setup are you expecting around the middle?
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, and I think Kilkenny will have worked on that and will have learned from that from the semi-final, because Cork got 5 points from play from midfield, so that is going to be, you know, they'll have to address that, and you know, the dynamic duo of Niamh Kilkenny and Aoife Donoghue in midfield from a Galway point of view are very, very strong. Now Niamh has, you know, in the last game had, and sometimes throughout this championship has played wing forward, but I think her best position is midfield along with Aoife Donoghue. So it's going to be very interesting if Anna Farrell and Dalton start midfield and go up against Niamh Kilkenny and Aoife Donoghue. But it's going to be very interesting, and I do think Kilkenny will have learned from the previous game against Cork that they need to be tighter and that they need to you know, contribute more from that middle section. I'd also say, and going back to the last point about, you know, throwing off the shackles and Dunica's point, Kilkenny need to come into this game and, you know, start from, you know, just all guns blazing, because they were slow to start last year. Galway got 3 goals in the first half, and it's very hard to recover from that. You know, 3-14-17 was the final score. You know, against Cork in the semi-final, they went 1-3 down after 8 minutes. And as Aoife alluded to earlier, they went 21 minutes in the second half of scoring. So they are going to have to, you know, take off the shackles. They're going to have to, you know, come out all guns blazing and not have those lapses in concentration and, you know, be, as Aoife said, give 100% for the 100% of the duration of the game and hold that concentration. And that's going to be from number 1 to 15 in the subs that come on. So it's going to be from all over the pitch, but they're going to have to make sure that they, you know, that they just concentrate and don't have lapses in concentration.
Okay, call it, Aisling.
In one word, Galway, if you ask me to expand, I think the forward threat will just be a little bit more from Galway. And I think Katie Power and Michelle Quincy are huge losses, scoring threats this year for Kilkenny. So I think Galway will edge it.
And Aoife, we're not letting you off the hook now. You're going to have to call it as well.
Well, look, I've been poor on these for the last few weeks. I think I need some tips from Colin Byrne at this stage. So, look, seeing as Aisling went for Galway, I'll just balance it out. And I am and a Cork woman to say this, it's a hard one, but I'll go for Kilkenny just to balance it out.
Okay, guys, thanks so much, Aoife and Aisling. And anyone who is listening and wants to tune in, there will be live coverage of the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship Final from Croke Park on Saturday and on RTE2 and RTE Player. And online as well. And we would love everyone to tune in for a celebration of women's sport.
FM. Game on 2FM. With Green Fern. Snack smart. With Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is heading for halftime, or it is halftime in the early kickoffs in the Champions League tonight. Lisa Fallon is with us for some updates. Lisa?
Yeah, still Liverpool 1, Midtjylland 0. That Mo Salah goal in the first minute from the Midtjylland defensive error. But Fabinho did have to clear one off the line, actually. Kevin Kelleher was beaten at his near post.
Don't say that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was Fabinho did really, really well just to get back and hook it off the line. Certain goal otherwise. And Diego Jota, he's been really lively again, and he's just had a shot saved just on a minute before the break. But it's quite an even game. Like, you know, to be fair to Midtjylland, they're well in the game. You know, Liverpool will definitely need another goal or two if they want to see it out and see it out comfortably. And then in the PSG Istanbul Beşiktaş Şehir game, PSG, not surprisingly, 3-0 up. Neymar put them ahead in the 30th minute, a great goal, and then he scored the second goal. They actually broke from a corner, a defensive corner, a brilliant break, and Mbappe played a super ball across and Neymar scored. And then the third goal is actually a bit bizarre. So PSG actually scored. Backer, their left back, scored the goal, but VAR actually recalled it and reviewed it and gave them a penalty. So that overruled the goal and gave them a penalty. So, look, it's...
can VAR do?
No, yeah. So Mart Gunach, the Beshak Shahir goalkeeper, got booked for his troubles. And then that was just before Mbappe converted the penalty and put PSG 3-0 up. So, yeah, another new one for VAR.
Very much so. And there's one other game. Ajax are playing Atalanta, and that is nil all at half time. Now we are going to turn our attention to ladies football. We spent quite a bit of time earlier this week talking about what happened off the field with the Cork Galway All Ireland semi final, and I think we're doing the players and the game a disservice if we don't actually talk about what happened on the field. It was an All Ireland semi final, and Cork did qualify for an All Ireland final. So Nadine Doherty joins us now. Nadine, I think it is fair to say that we need to talk about the game because the players themselves deserve it as well. It didn't end up being on television. We didn't really get to see much of it, which was very disappointing, but it was a semi-final and Cork did do a good job out there.
Yeah, absolutely, Marie. You know, and just to acknowledge it, you know, it was disappointing for everybody involved, and it is upsetting for the LGFA because so much work has been done and it was so disappointing to see them being torn apart. But I think it was the reaction more than anything that caused that upset. But as you said, look, the players have suffered here. I feel Galway will probably be thinking, what if? Cork, their return to an All-Ireland final, it's been completely overshadowed. It sounded like a classy performance, and that's gone unnoticed. And, you know, the Championship, it's been such a lift to us all over the last few months, and I feel it's probably been the most exciting and evenly contested Championship in years. So we do have this brilliant final to look forward to, but I just think what was highlighted over the weekend was just the complete disconnect between the association and the players it represents. And, you know, as you said, look, it's a need for some kind of negotiations to begin with each association and maybe with the aid of a committee of some sort to be made up with members who maybe aren't in the GAA family. But look, Cork and Galway, I saw the highlights that were available. You know, it looked like a brilliant, brilliant Cork move and performance. They were quick, classic Cork goals in that Cusack Park end. And, you know, they just seem to be way, way ahead of the pace of Galway, and no surprise to see them back. They dominated. They were patient against what looked like a really packed Galway defence. They prized openings, they pressed the Galway kickouts, and they got scores off the back of it. And I think they'll have to do both of that to an even greater measure against Dublin. But as I said, I am delighted to see them back in the final because they've always produced the performance. And I feel they are in with a real chance this year. They seem to be hitting their peak just at the right time. They've really come in under the radar. And I think it's going to be a cracking final.
And Orla Finn had her scoring boots on with 9 points, 8 from frees. But Melissa Duggan and Ciara O'Sullivan with the goals in the first half. And we're seeing different goal scorers nearly all the time with Cork, which must be a worry if you're Dublin.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Orla Finn, we know how good Orla Finn is from the dead ball. She got 8 points from frees. And, you know, in any team, if you have a consistent free taker, and especially I feel in ladies football, if you look back at any of the successful Cork teams, even these Dublin teams, there's a consistent free taker. If it's Sinead Ahern for Dublin, Orla Finn now for Cork. And Melissa Duggan's goal was absolutely brilliant. Set up by Eric O'Shea, what I saw of her, really, really impressive. And that Cork half back line, I mean, it was always a fantastic attacking half back line. And they seem to have that back in their game as well. Hannah Looney from midfield, really powerful, really composed. I see Niamh Cotter is back on the bench. You know, she's going to be an option. She plays her club football in Dublin. She plays alongside Lauren McGee in midfield for Croke. So, you know, she'll know Lauren really well. To spring her off the bench, she might even be in contention for a place in the final. Ciara O'Sullivan, a classic finish. She'll solo in with her right foot, low with the left foot. And Dearne O'Sullivan, even though, you know, she only got a point from play, I'd imagine Dearne pulled a lot of strings out around the middle. And yeah, look, Cork seems to be peaking at the right time, very much so.
Okay, well, Nadine, we will be previewing that game in much more detail next week, but thanks so much for joining us and giving us an overview on what happened, because a lot of us didn't get to even, obviously nobody got to see it because it wasn't on the telly, but it's a tough time for the players, and I'm glad that we did get to hear about it. Nadine, thanks so much, and we'll chat to you next week. We're going to take a quick break, and then Lynn Gaynor will join us.
Game on 2FM.
with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, I am delighted to say that we are joined by an absolute legend of Gaelic games, Lynn Gaynor from Tipperary. Lynn, how are you? You've got a new book out, Chiselled from Ash. And I have to say, as names of books go, yours is absolutely perfect.
I don't know about that, but being perfect. What do you call it again? Chiselled from Ash. I think one of the players that was interviewed about the book said that man, if you cut his blood, if you cut him, he'd bleed ash. So the producer came up with the name of Chiselled from Ash. So that was me, really. Anyway,
I think it's an absolutely brilliant name, anyway, and a brilliant book as well. And you know, you've such a varied career from player to manager, and not everybody who goes from player to manager makes a success of it, but you certainly did. And if you're to look back over your career, and obviously you're still obsessed with the game, Len, how has it evolved over the years?
The game itself, it has evolved out of all recognition. In our day, in my day, like in the 60s, it was a slower, tougher, harder game, and nearly all ground hurling, you know, but that has evolved now, and just as well, because everything moves on and everything changes, and just as well because we get bored if things stay the same. But the game nowadays, it has, you know, the skill levels have completely altered. They're completely better than we were. They're faster and more accurate. And of course, they're far better trained as well, and physical condition with all the diets and all that sort of stuff is really bringing the best out of the players. But I think it's a marvellous game now. The skill levels are unbelievable. The ball, I suppose, is a good bit lighter, and that's a big help. But in my day, if you were seen rising the ball with one hand in the hurley, you'd nearly be taken off. You know, now you'd never see a guy rising the ball with one hand in the hurley, or with two hands in the hurley. He's able to rise it at full speed with one hand in the hurley, and that's unbelievable from my point of view. Anyway, I think it's a great game now.
Len, I'm not sure if you remember, but when I was a child, you were managing Clare, and my father Tim was involved with you. And I remember you being around our house when we were small. But what I remember most about that time was your daughter Kira. And you know, we're talking now about 20 by 20 and having heroes and role models. But I remember her from those days when she came to the house, and she was obviously a Tipperary Camogie player. And to me, she was just absolutely amazing. But it was just brilliant to have somebody like that around, because we didn't get to see women's sport on television, so it was great to see her. I don't know if you remember those days.
Oh, I do remember. I remember them very fondly as well. I had great time in Clare there, and the kids used to come with me. The girls used to come with me a lot of the time when I was training down there, and I got to know all the Clare players, Anthony Daly and Sparrow and all those guys, you know. And Kira was very fun. She's amazing what people pick up. They're watching you there and you don't realise it if you're in the limelight. Like Kira was as a player and I was maybe as manager, but people are watching you and they can recall things that you said or things that you did or whatever, and you have to be on your guard all the time, you know, because you are under the spotlight a bit.
Lynn, when you think back to those days, my dad always used to say to me that management teams then, you had your manager, a couple of selectors and the county chairman, and that's all that would be in the dressing room. And now if you look at the backroom teams and inter-county management, and of course your son-in-law is the manager now of Waterford, it's completely different now.
Well, it is, but I presume all those guys would be in the dressing room before the game or that, you know. You're right about not having too many, and your father is right, Tim. He was a great trainer at that time. He's right about not having too many. I remember when I took over my own club, Kilmarnock McDonough's, and the first championship match we were playing, sure, everyone was in the dressing room, you know. But I asked Danny for everyone to leave just for the players and the selectors. And because they all trooped out, you know. But it's the only way you can deal with the players and talk to them and get them to hear you and what you're saying. Because if there's people in there that aren't involved in the team, they're going to be chatting to themselves and chatting to players and telling them what to do, and the whole thing can be a mix-up. So, yeah, I think a clear-headed dressing room is very important to get the players in the right mood for the game.
So, ahead of Sunday now, how do you think it's going to go, Len?
Well, sure, look, I'm hoping that Waterford would win now on account of Liam especially, but I have a soft spot for Waterford anyway. The first All-Ireland final I ever went to was 1959, and it was Waterford versus Kilkenny, and Waterford won it after a replay. They had a magnificent team that time, Ned Power in the goals and Austin Flynn and Tom Cunningham, John Barron, Martin O'Morrissey, Tom Cheesty, Frankie Welsh, all those lads. They were all stars. They played brilliant hurling, and they had a first impression on me, made a big impression on me. And I've liked them ever since. Of course, we'd be beating them if I met them with Tipperary, but well, after that, if they were there, I would like to see them win All-Ireland. I'd like to see them win this one, even apart from Liam. They deserve it. They played great hurling down through the years, and they didn't get many great results, you know. They didn't win All-Ireland. But they make a very strong team, a very good team, and they will be very hard to beat. But I'll give, if one of them can play to the best of their ability, they're going to win.
Lynn, you mentioned it there, the game has moved on an awful lot, but it is a special time for these young men to reflect where they're from, to go out and represent their counties. It's an incredible honour.
Oh, it is a great honour. You know, I never dreamt when I was a young lad growing up that I'd be on a county team or anything like that. I just loved hurling. I was playing hurling all the time in the yard at home, and you'd be milking cows and timing hay and all that sort of stuff that time. We were farmers, and I'd built you up a bit for the hurling. But then I got on the tip minors, and then I got on the tip under-21s, and next thing I was on the tip senior team, and I couldn't believe it, because Tony Warner, who was captain at that time, he was my hero, really, and next thing I was playing beside him. You know, it was a huge honour, because you represented a county that are depending on you to give them a great day out and a great year out. Tipperary in particular, I suppose, maybe they're all the same, but they really take pride in their hurlers. And if the hurlers do well, everyone else feels well. They feel good about it. But if the hurlers do bad, then everyone is gloomy and down and out. So it is a great honour to be asked to play, and a great honour to be able to play.
Well, and you definitely made your mark on plenty of people along the way. Best of luck with the book, Chiselled from Ash. It is in all bookstores around the country. Lisa, a very quick update before we go.
Yeah, that sound lad from Cork Dunica, Caoimhín Kelleher, he's looking to become the first Liverpool goalkeeper to keep back-to-back clean sheets in his first two Champions League games. So far, the second half has just started. He's on target for that. And PSG against Istanbul Beşiktaş is 4-1 now. Neymar has his hat-trick. Lovely finish from the edge of the box. And after 50 minutes, he has the match ball in his pocket, as well as a couple of the Istanbul defenders.
Brilliant. Lisa, as we say in Cork, that's just pure standard.